Well, terrorism has no place in our world is what the Prime Minister Narendra Modi told the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu a short while back. This comes at a time when the situation in West Asia appears to be escalating. That situation increasingly getting out of hand. I'm going to go through what the Prime Minister said. He said he spoke to Prime Minister Netanyahu about recent developments in West Asia. Terrorism has no place in our world. It's crucial to prevent regional escalation and ensure the safe release of all hostages. India is committed to supporting efforts for an early restoration of peace and stability. Well, joining us now, a very special guest, Ravi Agarwal, the Editor-in-Chief of Foreign Policy. Ravi, thanks very much for being with us. It's quite clear that Israel is intent on eliminating the leadership of Hamas and, of course, Hezbollah now. You know, they've eliminated already many of the top leaders of Hezbollah. But do we know whether there is a tier two, a tier three, a tier four in place? In other words, is this a war, a battle that can go on indefinitely?
It certainly can. I mean, Israel has been trying to take out any form of leadership of Hamas and Hezbollah since October 7 of last year now. They've been going for whatever they can get. I think in the last couple of weeks, the main reason we've seen the escalations we've seen is the fact that Israel had, as we now know, bombs ready to go on pagers and walkie-talkies of key Hezbollah militia fighters. And it was forced to have those explode because it was worried that the intelligence around that was going to leak. That, of course, led to the escalation where we're at right now, where they needed to move quickly, having used up, you know, one of their best forms of intelligence, one of their best preemptive strikes on Hezbollah, to then hit the group at a moment of immense weakness, take out its leadership. And that's what they're going to try to do in the coming days, potentially with a limited ground incursion to take out as many Hezbollah fighters as they can. Remember, they have long seen Hezbollah, which is much bigger, much more equipped than Hamas ever has been. They've seen it as a loaded gun pointed at them, funded by Iran, and they want to degrade it, especially leading up to the October 7 anniversary next week.
I must ask you, you know, in this battle for eliminating terrorist leaders and leaders who don't work in Israel's interests, is the leadership in Iran in serious threat? I asked this because just 48 hours back, you know, there were reports that the Iranian leader, you know, Khamenei was had gone into hiding. I mean, is that as far as this might get?
I don't think so. I would be extremely surprised if there were to be a direct attack on the supreme leader of Iran or on Masoud Pezeshkian, the new president. Many of us who were in New York last week around the United Nations met some of the Iranian leaders who were in town. They have been quite consistent over the last few months that they're not looking for an escalation. They are, I think, a little bit surprised at the range and extent of how Israel has been able to take out its key proxies, Hamas and Hezbollah especially, but also the Houthis today. I think they're a little bit stunned on that front. But they don't want to act rashly. They don't see it as being in their advantage to act rashly. They want to hold on to the opportunity to attack and retaliate at a later date. And remember, underpinning all of this is the fact that the United States has considerable assets in the region right now. Yeah. And they don't want to provoke the United States to get involved in a direct attack on Iran. So in many senses, Tehran sees this as a provocation. It sees this as a moment where it does not want to take the bait. It wants to wait out October 7. It wants to wait out potentially even an American election in November, mm-hmm. and then reassess and see when it might want to retaliate at a moment of its own choosing.
You know, you were talking about the U.S. There's been an attack apparently by U.S. forces taking out 37 terrorists or eliminating 37 people in Syria as well. So, you know, you've got the attacks on Syria. The attacks on Beirut continue. We've seen Israel take out targets in Yemen as well. Is this now expanding beyond what we've seen in the past?
It has already. This is an expansion. But it has been expanding over the last few months. So in a sense, this shouldn't be a surprise. We have long worried about exactly this. Mm-hmm. The question in any escalation is, where does it stop? And we don't know the answer to that. And that is why you and I are having this discussion right now. This is why everyone is as worried as they are. Behind the scenes, not in the media, but behind the scenes, there are very senior level discussions going on about how to de-escalate, about how much is enough. And I think crucially, since October 7 until right now, the question has remained, who has leverage on Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's prime minister, to advise him to step to sort of calm things down, to advise him that enough is enough when it comes to Gaza? America should have that leverage, given all of the help and support it has given Israel in the last year and over the years. But the consensus view has now been that America is really not able to shift Israeli policy, despite all the signs and reports that we've heard about the White House being upset at Bibi Netanyahu, that he is doing what he needs to do, armed and supported by the United States.
Yeah. Ravi Agarwal, thanks very much for summarizing the situation. It is truly frightening at this stage. Thanks very much for sharing your thoughts. Joining us at this stage, I'm joined by Ambassador Virendra Gupta, also Dr. Swasti Rao, and Ray Locker, who's been tracking this very closely. Ray Locker, let me come to you first. You know, what I was discussing with, you know, my last panelist, Ravi Agarwal, how does this end and who gets Benjamin Netanyahu to accept that, look, you need to stop this because it's really spreading fast?
I'm not sure anybody gets Benjamin Netanyahu to stop doing what he's doing. He's winning right now, at least in his mind. I mean, taking out Nasrallah is a huge win for them. And now going after the Houthis and what's been happening with Hamas, I don't think anything gets him to stop in the near term. I think he's going to look at what's going to happen in the election and here and decide, well, I don't know what I'm going to do next.
Swasti Rao, how do you actually see, you know, this playing out? Because there's a strong possibility of an Israeli ground offensive, perhaps not limited, perhaps something more substantive, you know, just in the hours and days ahead. You know, and that expands the scope of the conflict. Hezbollah is not Hamas. They're much more substantive militarily. You know, I mean, could we see a great deal more bloodshed, you know, in the days ahead?
Hi, Vishnu. I mean, I would just like to sort of start with this very famous statement, which was made by this, you know, this very well-known scholar where, you know, there was this very solemn kind of realization that today you see that the centrifugal forces are far stronger than centralizing ones. And what is happening in West Asia is definitely a case study for this kind of a dangerous fragmentation which is happening in the world. So that's the first thing. The other thing is about, can this escalate? It is already into escalation. I mean, if you remember last year in October when this Hamas had brutally attacked Israelis, you know, in that music festival, you remember that everybody was playing out these scenarios. If you remember, most of these news debates were about, okay, what is the first case scenario, the other case, and the third case? And the third case was a direct confrontation between Israel and Iran. Mm-hmm. And now you see that it's very close to that. I mean, they have directly hit Nasrallah, who's been the major force behind Hezbollah. And everybody knows that Hezbollah is this outfit which is supported by Iran as a proxy. So I think we are already living in that escalation. So that's one realization that needs to dawn. The other thing is where it would stop. I don't think anybody has a clear answer to where it would stop. But I obviously, coming from the Indian vantage point, would worry about how does it impact India and what kind of scenarios, you know, would impact India. Sure. Of course, it's not in India's interest to see an escalation there. You see that we have excellent ties not only with Israel, but also with Iran. We have also stood for a two-state solution. Although right now, as I speak to you, in the context of what is happening, this sounds extremely bookish and extremely, for the heck of it, kind of an argument that we stand for two-state solution. Yes, we do. That's our official position. But of course, would be very worried if the crude oil prices would start getting affected. So far, surprisingly, there's been this wonderful balance of demand and supply, and we have actually not seen the crude oil prices getting affected, contrary to what a lot of people thought. And in fact, one of the escalatory results that everybody was worried about.
Just hold that thought for a moment. We'll talk about oil perhaps later, but I wanted to go across to Ambassador Gupta. You know, just last week in New York, we had the Prime Minister meet Mahmoud Abbas, the President of Palestine. president of the state of Palestine. Today, just a little while back, he spoke to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Now, obviously, speaking to Mahmoud Abbas is not speaking to Hamas, so that's absolutely clear. At the same time, you know, India continues to play this balancing game. The Prime Minister saying terrorism will not be accepted. At a time when Hezbollah, Israel is fighting Hezbollah, perhaps directly or indirectly referring to Hezbollah, which has not been a very direct reference by New Delhi earlier on as a terrorist entity. And yet balancing things out by speaking to the Palestinians as well. Could you try and explain to us what India's strategy right now is?
Well, India has always supported in principle Palestinian right to an independent state, and has made it very clear that India stands against all forms of terrorism. So I think to begin with, the genesis of the conflict in that October incident when a large terrorist attack was launched against Israel, and we have disavowedly, we have condemned it in no uncertain terms. So I think having said that, I share Ravi's assessment that it seems to me that this is not escalating into an all-out regional conflict, but it's already escalated to a very dangerous level, Vishnu. And I think the question that needs to be asked is whether military superiority can be leveraged into a long-term benefit. What is, after all, in Israel's interest? The genesis of the problem is the Palestinian conflict. And Israel wants, in the long term, security for its country, borders, and security for its people. And is that going to be achieved by Israel escalating the attacks on Lebanon, Hezbollah commanders? Agreed, a very large number of top leadership of Hezbollah has been eliminated using the real-time intelligence that Israel was able to gather. But many more will come up to take their places. Hezbollah, by any estimate, in fact, Hezbollah is supposed to have about 50,000-60,000 cadres in their fighting group. It's a very large fighting group, well-equipped, well-armored. And can they be silenced? Can they be completely tamed?
Sure. That's a valid
question. From the available indication, it seems.
Let me take that to Ray Locker. Ray, can Iran be silenced at this stage by Iran?
No, I don't think they can. I mean, you can't kill your way out of this conflict. I mean, haven't we seen that over the last, 80 years? I mean, that region has been riven by war repeatedly. I mean, Israel invaded Lebanon in 1982. How well did that work out? They had to do it again in 2006. I mean, they've had troops there on and off for the last 42 years. So you can't do that. But Netanyahu seems to be willing to try to do that. And right now he's getting what he wants. But these people aren't going to forget about what happened. The Hezbollah supporters in Lebanon, there's a lot more of them where these ones came from. And they're just going to be motivated to go after Israel. I mean, Hezbollah is committed to eliminating Israel. So if you're a member of Hezbollah, you don't want Israel around. You're not looking for an accommodation and some other way to make your lives better in Lebanon. So really, Israel doesn't have many options long term. They can't keep killing everybody there, and they're dealing with a foe that doesn't want them to exist, period. So it's pretty intractable. Iran has to decide what's in its best interest. Do they want to keep supporting these groups that are going nowhere? Meanwhile, you know, their quality of life has been steadily degraded by sanctions and their own government's incompetence.
Swasti, the other factor, of course, is Yemen in all of this. And Iran continues to arm Yemen. They've had a profound impact on shipping in the Red Sea. Israel attacked them just yesterday. Yeah. And yet they continue to launch ballistic missile attacks every now and again. Most get intercepted. They aren't successful. The Yemen factor is intriguing in this. I mean, how does the end game begin to appear as far as Yemen is concerned without there actually being a deployment of ground forces? That's something nobody seems willing to do.
Well, I mean, that also represents another part of the complexity of this entire situation, Vishnu, because one of the after effects or one of the spillovers that we saw of the Hamas's attack on Israel was the return of piracy in the form of Houthis. You know, Houthi menace was pretty much controlled in the Red Sea. If you remember the maritime trade, of course, Yemen and Saudi Arabia and the Houthis there, they were concentrated in a different region and there was bloodshed and everything going on there. And there was a very strong anti-Saudi Arabia sentiment because of what was happening in that part of Yemen, okay, that borders that region. But as far as the Red Sea is concerned, you know, you could see that our trade at least was going, that was the traditional route, the Suez Canal, Red Sea, you know, that was the traditional route. Also, there was a kind of a normalization which was underway, which had actually created space for, you know, frameworks like the I2, U2 on the one hand and IMEC on the other hand. I mean, we talked about that with so much fanfare last year at G20.
So what is the way forward as far as sorting out the Houthi issue is?
Yeah, so very quickly, I mean, I think the only one development that I've seen finally with respect to the Red Sea and Yemen is that for the first time, the Israelis have also sort of started targeting the Houthis. Mm-hmm. And it might have, implications for maybe how the international, maritime maritime commerce is getting, helping it getting it back or, escalating it or not, or, trying to sort of take down the capabilities of the Houthis. One doesn't really know because I don't think any answers would really exist in binaries. But I do have a sense that it is not in the interest of the great powers to let this conflict get out of hand, get into, a full-fledged war. Because, of course, even if you look, tactically speaking, if you look at where the American security assistance and its capabilities are concerned, I do not see the United States of America in a position to actually support Ukraine with billions and billions of worth of dollars and then also support Israel against its, this situation in the Middle East and then also ready for itself for a war in the Straits. So I think it would not really be in anybody's interest to let this actually go even further. Despite that, I think there are two factors. One is that is there a complete return of all the hostages, back to Israel? That would be one thing. And because if you remember, until last year and early, until this year.
And what is the second one?
The second one is that perhaps after the Israelis are able to sort of fend off the Houthi menace that UK and USA combined airstrikes have not been able to do, perhaps there would be some sort of a thing to sort of bring it down.
Ambassador Gupta, one final question to you. You know, the situation in the Red Sea is absolutely fraught. That's India's main, one of India's main economic corridors. And yet the Indian Navy has maintained this very fine line. You're operating absolutely in harm's way, but you aren't willing to engage Houthi drones or Houthi missiles. You're just rendering assistance to ships in distress. At some stage, that fine line, may end up being broken if you come under direct attack. But what do you see India's position with our maritime diplomacy being in the Red Sea?
Well, on maritime security, India's view has been to collaborate with other countries, act in concert to ensure safety of the sea lanes of communication. Because much of our trade flows through those channels. And therefore, it will be in our interest. But on the other hand, we also do not want to get involved in the conflict. You talked about the balance. I don't think we really look for any balance, but we have a principled approach. And that principled approach itself provides for the kind of balance that you're talking about. We do support Israel from the standpoint of no tolerance for terrorism. But we also support the Palestinian demand to have independent. And I think you asked, what could be the solution going forward is that the, big countries have expressed concern. India is also concerned. I think all countries must put their mind together, work together in trying to craft a solution, a long-term solution. And I think some pressure has to be brought. Now, it's not easy to say that, Netanyahu is beyond reproach, beyond reproach, and nobody can put pressure. I don't think that is true. Mm-hmm. That is just an excuse for many large countries for not acting in the right manner. So I think the time has come. This already has escalated. And I think once somebody should look at the human dimension. About a million, maybe that is an exaggeration, but a very large number of people, running into hundreds of thousands of people in Lebanon, have been displaced. Hundreds of thousands of people in Gaza have been displaced. And mind you, in Israel also, there are close to about 100,000 people have been displaced. I've been to the northern Israel many times when I was posted there, Kiryat Shemona, and so many residents over there, they're not safe. Hundreds of people have been killed in Israel. So I think the people in Israel, I believe, are as much of a peace-loving people as people elsewhere.
Sure.
The mothers in Israel are not happy when their children, when their sons are getting killed in the northern Israel attacks. So I think they also pine for peace and security.
Sure.
And I think the question to ask is that a price which is justifiable, which the Israeli people are willing to pay?
All right. I'm just going to interrupt you now because we need to quickly move on. But I'd like to thank you all very much for being with us. I spoke a little while earlier on to the new Israeli Consul General for the south of India, Ambassador Oli Weitzman. This is what she said. The sense many of us are getting is that this is a war that's ready to expand. There have been strikes, more strikes in Beirut. There have been strikes in Syria as well. There have been strikes in Houthi-held areas of Yemen. Would it be fair to say that, you know, a larger war might be upon us?
Okay. First of all, thank you for having me this evening. I think you're asking the question. I think you're asking basically the wrong person. Israel, since the beginning of October, since the 8th of October, has been attacked repeatedly by Iran proxies, whether it was in the north by Hezbollah or from Yemen by the Houthis. And Israel is doing whatever it has to do in order to protect its citizens and make sure that citizens can return to their homes safely. Israel, of course, would like to do this diplomatically and would very much hope that both Hezbollah and other attackers stop attacking us and implement the 1701 UN resolution, which would basically ensure the safety of Israel and especially the northern border. So if it was up to Israel, Israel prefers, of course, not to be in a conflict. It prefers to avoid violence as much as possible. But until others are willing to stop attacking Israel, Israel has a duty to protect its citizens.
Is it your sense, ma'am, that a ground invasion of Lebanon is now imminent?
It really depends on the reaction of the Iran allies in the different places. Like I said, Israel will do whatever it has to do in order to ensure the safety. And if invasion is what's needed, then unfortunately that's what will have to happen. But I'm still hopeful that there will be some kind of diplomatic resolution for this.
Hezbollah, for their part, say that they are ready and anticipating an Israeli ground offensive. How would you respond to that statement of Hezbollah?
I think it's a very sad statement because it shows again that there's no really real willingness for peace on the other side. There's no willing of a resolution and there's no willing to accept Israel and its safety needs. So for me, it's a very, very sad statement. And unfortunately, shows exactly what kind of a terrorist organization we're dealing with and what the fact that they have no intention for peace in any way.
Israel has, and apparently the United States has also been targeting members of Hamas and Hezbollah in Syria as well. Is it at this stage a situation where Israel will continue to fight and target those identified as leaders of the Hamas and Hezbollah, no matter which part of the world they're in?
Israel will attack anyone who is a threat to its security and to the security of its citizens. And that really is, especially in areas that are so close to the border and that can affect Israel directly by places where missiles can be fired from. In Yemen, it's further away from Israel, but still we've been attacked from there. So wherever needed to secure the safety, Israel will make sure that the safety is retained.
And let's talk a little bit about Houthi areas which Israel has attacked. Do you sense that these attacks will continue? Because the Houthi threats are not just the occasional missile attack against Israel direct. It's also against shipping, which goes from Israel or to Israel.
So I want to remind you that it's not only against the ships that go to or from Israel. Many other ships have been attacked. The Houthis are a threat to all the area, and they threat the stability of all the region. And again, whatever needs to be done will be done.
And ma'am, as far as Iran is concerned, Iran continues, as we understand it, to step up shipments of arms. Whether the latest round of attacks done by Israel on Houthi targets was because there was a sense that more arms were coming in from Iran. Iran remains your biggest concern at this juncture. Again, what is the way out? How does this all realistically come to an end?
So I think Iran is the what we call the head of the snake. It's basically it's the one that's making everything happen more. Like they're using their allies in all kinds of different ways to make sure and to attack Israel in every way and to provoke Israel in every way. If Iran repeatedly declares that it wants to eliminate Israel, I think the question should be directed at Iran to say why won't they accept Israel's existence and why won't they put their arms down. If they do that, you know, the whole region will be peaceful. But until they decide to stop attacking Israel, whether directly or through allies, there can't really be a peace. But it's, I think that they hold a very important key to this. But they repeatedly discuss the fact that they want to destroy Israel and give Israel no legitimacy, and no country would be willing to accept that, and no leader would be willing to let their citizens be threatened by that kind of thing.
Let's talk a little bit about the ground situation in Gaza. It is a matter of concern. The loss of lives is a matter of concern. And I think Israel recognizes it as well, that the loss of lives is unfortunate. You know, your targets are not civilians on the ground. But there is a humanitarian crisis. And again, as far as Gaza is concerned, what is the road out? Where does the fighting actually come to an end? Where can reconstruction, rehabilitation really pick up pace?
So again, Israel unfortunately got dragged into a situation on the 7th of October that it really, really, you know, many Israelis were murdered and kidnapped that day. What we saw was basically that in Gaza itself, the whole city was underlined with tunnels and prepared for attacks. And basically, Hamas, since basically they took over in 2007, because Israel, I remind you, exited Gaza in 2005, and in 2007 Hamas took over by killing their own PLO people. They actually physically threw them out, threw them from the rooftops and took over violently. And then, it's such a horrible terrorist group that it not only attacks Israeli civilians, but also uses its own civilians as human shields. So basically, until we are able to eradicate Hamas and make sure that they're not a threat to Israeli citizens, and hopefully by that eliminating threats to Palestinian citizens as well, who are being basically held captive by this horrible regime, it won't be able to stop.
Ma'am, to the best of your knowledge, are there people in Lebanon who have been warned by the Israeli government to move away from areas where you presume strikes might take place? Has there been a widespread response to that? The reason I ask is because in as much as you are hitting military targets, there are innocents who are losing their lives as well.
Yes. So Israel made a very big point in southern Lebanon. Israel contacted all the population in the area where Hezbollah was basically hiding their weapons within houses of civilians. Hezbollah basically infiltrated the whole civilian population there and hid its weapons inside that population. In those areas, people received phone calls, received radio messages, pamphlets in any way possible to try and warn people to leave the area so that it could be dealt with and the threat could be eliminated. And we saw many people who did manage to leave and who fled the area. And I think a lot of lives were saved that way, because Israel did its utmost to try and spare civilian lives, because it's important to us. It's one of the things that we really, human life is an important value for us.
And a final question, ma'am. If you actually look at the Hezbollah leadership, which has by and large been eliminated, it's quite clear that Israel wants to eliminate this group completely. If the top leadership of Hezbollah has already been eliminated, and we believe that they have been, Israel has announced the terrorists who are being eliminated. The question again is, where does this stop? Or is there a sense that there is a tier two or a tier three of their leadership, which might mean that this can go on indefinitely?
So again, it will stop when Hezbollah is disarmed implements the 1701 resolution. That's when it will stop. So as long, I mean, Hezbollah once it puts down its weapons or demilitarizes, that's when we'll be able to stop. As long as there are still militants, Hezbollah terrorists who are militants and are trying to fight and trying to fire rockets, and we see rockets being fired despite the eliminations, we have to keep making sure that Israel is safe.
And just for the benefit of our viewers, and I think this is an important point, your fight is with Hezbollah, it's not with the people of Lebanon, right? I think that it bears to be repeated. That's an important point. Go ahead, ma'am.
Absolutely, and I'll remind you that Hezbollah kills not only Israeli citizens, Jewish citizens, but they kill Americans, they kill French, and they kill other Muslims who are with different beliefs than they do. So I think definitely I would say that Israel has no problem with the Lebanese people, and you know we really sometimes feel for them because we know that some of them are very affected by Hezbollah, and some of them are very happy. Would be very happy if Hezbollah was eliminated, so that they can thrive and continue with their lives.
Olet Orly Weitzman, thank you very much, ma'am, for being with us and sharing Israel's perspective on what is, let's face it, a frightening situation in West Asia. Thank you very much, ma'am, for being with us.
Thank you.